I've been playing outdoors since I was a kid, standing by the front door at around 2 years old, hollering, "Side, side," trying to get my mom to let me go play outside. Now, after 30-plus years working in the outdoor business, I'm dropping insider conversations every week with brand leaders, guides, marketers, CEOs, and others that make the outdoor business a trillion-dollar juggernaut that drives product innovation, revenue, and public policy for everything outdoors. I'm Rick Sayes. Welcome to the Outdoor Biz Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this week's guest on episode 153 of Colombia Calling is Lorenzo Perafan, who will be on the radio very shortly from Sydney, Australia. So, yes, given the connections and given the time difference, please bear with us on this one. It's been a phenomenal week in Colombia. I mean, who else to talk about this than everyone? It's been a phenomenal week. We've had the peace agreement between the FARC and the government signed. Yes, it was signed by the members of the FARC Secretariat and Humberto de la Calle there in Havana, Cuba, bringing to an end almost 4 years of negotiations. Negotiations that surrounded political participation, agrarian reform, illicit drugs, transitional justice, the rights of the victims, and indeed how to end the conflict. And of course, now we are sitting here and thinking about, well, it's Tuesday. We've been into a complete, full, and definitive ceasefire since midnight Monday morning. I mean, this is unbelievable. And 52 years of war, 52 years of conflict, misery, killing, so on, is coming to an end. But of course, it's not all plain sailing. There's plenty to do in the coming months. There's plenty to do in the coming months. But at the same time, we have to aim at and towards the referendum, the plebiscite referendum to take place on October the 2nd here in Colombia. That's Sunday, October the 2nd. All Colombians listening to this will go out and vote, I hope. I am asking of you, vote whichever way you want, but vote. Exercise your right to vote. So it's yes or no, and you're making a referendum on the peace agreements here with the FARC. It's not perfect. The agreement is far from perfect. But surely what we've been living in the last few months, up to even a year, has been better than the 52 years previous to this. It's not perfect, but it will help Colombia move towards greater transparency. So we'll see. We'll see how this all, how this all sort of pans out. But October the 2nd. So remember, 13% is all that the government needs in this plebiscite of the registered voters in Colombia. So that's about 4.5 million people need to vote in favor of these peace accords, and they will be pushed through Congress, made into law, and so on. So the guerrillas now are, you know, taking things easy, working things out, and moving towards their 10th Congress, which will be in September in San Vicente de Caguán. I'm trying to get there in my condition as journalist. So we'll see. If I do get there, I will report from San Vicente to all of you, hopefully as live as I can. But anyway, that's all I'm talking about. I can see that Lorenzo Perafan is on the line from Sydney, Australia. So we're going to talk to him about the Kogi Coffee Company and him exporting coffee from Colombia, from the Sierra Nevada to Australia. And also we're going to ask him to reflect as a Colombian so far from home on how he feels during this historic moment in Colombian history. Who would have thought it? So I'm Richard McColl. This is Colombia Calling. Please stay listening, spread the word, and keep on driving us up the charts. I want to share with you, we were fifth on the iTunes chart last week, so that was a huge red letter day for me and for the shows. Thank you again for all of your support and listening. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these publicity breaks. Thank you. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl here in Bogota, Colombia. And for the very second time, not the first time, but for the very second time, I'm talking to a special guest in Australia. The first time we talked to someone in Australia was the blogger, writer, Colombiaphile extraordinaire, Sarah Duncan, who's known by her, let's say her handle or her sort of web presence name is Sarepa, for her love of arepa. So she's about the biggest fan of Colombia, I think, down under, who's not Colombian. But this time we're talking to a Colombian down there in Australia, in Sydney, today on the line with us, and he's going to talk to us about, well, we're going to talk about Australia, we're going to talk about Colombia, but in principle, we're going to talk to Lorenzo Perafan about his business, which is exporting Kogi coffee, so that's from the Sierra Nevada in the north coast of Colombia, on the north coast of Colombia, to Australia. So, you know, so we're talking about specialist coffee to Australia. So Lorenzo, welcome on Colombia Calling.
Hey, Richard, thanks a lot for having me.
You're most welcome, Lorenzo. Now, so first of all, let's start with the fact is, how did you find out about Colombia Calling?
Someone recommended it to me on Twitter. I was doing a lot of social media for a project we were doing with the business. And a friend pointed me to your Twitter handle. I started listening, and that's when I sent you a DM.
That's cool, isn't it? It's amazing how the world works today. I mean, that's it, isn't it? I had an email from North Carolina congratulating the podcast today for an American married to a Colombian who's coming down. It's a big shout out to you, Brent. Thank you for that email. I've had a direct message today from a French journalist who wants to get in touch. And also, I met today with a young student from the EAN University here in Bogota who wants to be my intern. So that's social media for you.
There you go. We're all connected these days.
I'm very flattered that people should get in touch. But anyway, so Lorenzo, tell me about yourself. Now, you're not from Bogota, but you studied in Bogota.
That's right. I'm from the beautiful city of Popayán.
The white city.
I studied in Los Andes, and then when I was around 20 years old, I transferred to George Mason University in Virginia, in the States. Mm-hmm. Finished uni there, and then because my now wife was living and studying in Brisbane, Australia, I came here with the excuse of doing a master's in communications. And then we ended up staying because, really, living in Australia is pretty good.
It's pretty good. I mean, and I can hear a slight twang in your accent, a slight Australian accent, but it's not taken over. I mean, you are definitely from Colombia. You haven't lost your identity of that, I am sure. But you've been 15 years or so out of Colombia. That's a long time. I mean,
pretty much.
Let's talk first about your coffee. Let's get into that, because first of all, it's interesting. You've gone from psychology to economics to communications, but now we're doing coffee.
I guess I've been all over the place. I'm one of those. When I started working in Australia, I was in the telecommunications industry. I worked for Virgin Mobile for a long time, and then a couple of smaller companies. But at some point, I wanted to do something for myself. And the Kogi Coffee project came up, and we found it to be a really beautiful project, not just a business, but a great way to give back and to learn. And we've been doing that ever since. And the coffee industry in Australia is super interesting. It's nothing like what you would see in Colombia, where I don't know if your listeners know, but Colombian coffee is supposed to be one of the best in the world. But what we drink down there in Colombia is really what's left behind because all the good stuff gets exported.
Yeah, that's one of the cases that happens all over the coffee producing world as well.
Pretty much.
In Guatemala, nobody knew what good coffee was when I lived there back in the 90s. And then here it's true. I mean, what you get in those thermoses at the side of the road or on the street, heavily sweetened three-day-old coffees, you know, it's not what you're looking for, is it? But when did you start up the Kogi Coffee Company?
Well, the initial idea came up over a year ago. My father was visiting from Colombia. He's an anthropologist and a lawyer. He's worked for the Inter-American Development Bank for the last about 10 years.
Wow.
And even before then, he worked with the Kogi a lot. He was the one who... After the new constitution, Colombian constitution of 91, that recognized indigenous people's right to self-govern, my father worked with the Kogi to put down in paper what those laws and rules were.
Wow, it's a he had a big role, in the new constitution.
Yeah, big role. He published a couple of books, not just with the Kogi, but with the Wayuu and other indigenous peoples in Colombia. And he's been very involved with sustainable development projects, etc. So when he was here, we were commenting about how good the coffee was here and what the appetite in Australia for different kinds of coffees and stuff that's basically new. So he at that time the Kogi were starting to send out their coffee to the internal market and exporting to Germany. So we had the idea to approach them to see if they wanted to export to Australia, and that's how it all started. So a couple of months later we were down in the Sierra Nevada meeting with the people of the Resguardo. The Resguardo is the indigenous authority that represents them towards the, I guess, the outside world or the Colombian government. And we actually took a few Australian filmmakers and photographers with us. And we ended up doing the trek up to one of the townships in the Sierra Nevada, a place called San Antonio. So after 2 days of hiking and riding in mules and going through horrible roads, we stayed there for like a week, living with the Kogi and learning about what the coffee means to them. And a couple of months later, the coffee was here.
It's amazing. I'm going to ask you, though, let's wind back a little bit and explain to my listeners, perhaps, who the Kogi are. I mean, we know they're from the North Coast, they're from the Sierra Nevada, but tell us a little bit about the history of this culture.
So the Kogi are a mountain people, like you said, from the Sierra Nevada. They're one of four indigenous groups that descend from the Tairona culture. So that language group is called Tairona. And there are other three groups, the Arawakos, which are famous for their mochilas, the Wiwa, the Cuancuamos, and the Kogi. So maybe because they're a mountain people and they've been so isolated, they're one of the Colombian cultures that have managed to keep their culture and their traditions more or less intact. Even though there's been some colonization around and Some campesinos have arrived in the Sierra. The Kogi are actually very jealous of that culture, and they've managed to keep it. And there's around between 15 and 20,000 of them still living in the Sierra. And they're well known for how connected they are to their environment.
Do they? That is the Kogi are the people who refer to us as the hermanos menores.
That's right.
The little brothers.
They call us the little brothers. They the name they give to themselves is Kagaba rather than Kogi. Mm-hmm. That's what we white people call it.
Okay.
And they consider themselves to be the first peoples. That started to populate the earth. So they consider themselves the elder brothers of humanity and the guardians of the earth. So that's why they call everybody else younger brother.
Very spiritual.
Very spiritual, very connected to Mother Earth. And recently, they've seen how some of their environment has been basically invaded by development and mining interests. Mm-hmm. And also, because they live so high up in the mountain, they've seen a lot of changes due to global warming. So, a few years ago, the Mamus, who are the spiritual authorities and basically the bigger authorities that rule their cultural life, mm-hmm. Decided that they wanted to reach out to everybody else in the world and raise awareness of the environmental difficulties that they're experiencing. So they've collaborated with filmmakers on a couple of documentaries. Maybe your listeners can look up a documentary called Aluna, A-L-U-N-A.
Yeah.
That was made by an Englishman. And that's on Netflix, by the way.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Aluna on Netflix. So we can learn about
Aluna
the
Kogi. Aluna on Netflix.
Okay.
And if they can't find it on Netflix because of, it's Netflix is different in different regions.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's on Vimeo or YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure it's there because everything is somewhere now.
Exactly.
Very interesting indeed. Now, I just wanted, as we sort of talk about the Kogi and their spirituality, and, you know, there is a mistrust of outsiders, and obviously so. I mean, this is a culture who survived the conquistadors, who survived various waves of colonization or attempts of colonization. It's interesting to me that you and your dad traveled up into, a couple of days up into the Sierra Nevada, San Antonio, and you clearly over the week there won their trust. You know, it's because it's a confidence thing as well. You know, they don't necessarily want you there, do they?
No, they don't. Mm. They don't necessarily want tourism or people to come along. They're actually a really friendly people, but they've been burned before. So actually in the time that we were there, it took us a few days to gain their trust. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we had a Kogi person that's not from that area that went with us, and his name is Arrego Cés Coronado. Mm-hmm. And he was key to them accepting us there.
Of course, it's an introduction.
But there was a lot of mistrust because at the time that we were there, apparently there were some people in the area that were doing some mining exploration, mm-hmm. apparently illegal mining. So they're very careful with that stuff because they've had bad experiences before.
Well, I can imagine.
But if not for my father having worked with the authorities for years, it would have been pretty hard for us to to reach them.
Definitely. I mean, you were in a privileged position to be able to, let's say, negotiate and work with them, because it's not, you know, I only know a little bit about the Kogis. I've seen the Kogis when I've been in Tairona, etc. And I see a few of them down here in Bogota when they're here. But I've done a little bit of business here and there with YU. And these are tough people to deal with. You know, I mean, you're talking about negotiating. they really drive a hard bargain. But then,
yeah, for sure.
You know, they want to export their coffee. They want to do this, but they want to do it through the right people. So it sounds like, you know, you went through that period, almost like a trial period up there with them for the week. I mean, how was that? As we're winding down the first section of this show, how was it spending a week there with them?
Well, it was really amazing. The first of all, the place is really peaceful, really, really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we were there without any electricity or running water, sleeping in hamacas, enjoying their hospitality.
Yeah.
They're really lovely people. Once they accepted us, they were super welcoming. And you just breathe a different air up there, and you feel the spirituality. On the other hand, our Australian friends had some gastrointestinal problems.
I can imagine.
Yeah. But all in all, it was a really amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were really, really happy to have been there, and we ended up collecting really amazing footage.
I bet, even despite the deli belly.
Yeah, exactly. Despite the cocky belly, the guys that we work with turned out to be amazing photographers, and the film came out really, really great. It's actually one cut of the film is up for a cinematography award right now.
Well, where can we see this film?
It's not, the full film is not out for the public yet, but it'll be on Vimeo pretty soon.
Okay.
I can tell your listeners to have a look at kogicoffee.com.au.
Yeah.
And it'll be up there in soon enough.
Okay. Well, of course, you let us know when it's up, and we'll share the link on Columbia Calling to make sure that everybody sees it.
Absolutely.
Well, Lorenzo, we're going to take a short break right now. This has been really fascinating talking about the Kogi. We're going to take a short break here, and we're going to come back and talk further about the coffee culture in Australia, and then explore some further thoughts that you have as a Colombian in Australia at this historic time in Colombian contemporary history. So don't go away, listeners. This is Columbia Calling. I'm talking to Lorenzo Perafán, who is in Sydney at this moment, and we'll be right back with further interviews, of course, with further conversations with Lorenzo. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, and our very special guest this week on episode 153 is Lorenzo Perafán, originally from Popayán, the white city, a beautiful city down in Cauca in the south. I guess it's an hour and a half from Cali, depending on which road you take or which transport you take, of course. But yes, he's somehow, over time, he's gone from Popayán via Bogota and Virginia to end up in Australia, where he's now a citizen with his Caleña wife down there. But what we're really talking about, though, is something very special. And we're talking a bit about the Kogi culture of the Sierra Nevada up in the north coast, the Caribbean coast. If any of you have been to or plan on going to places like Minca or doing the Lost City Trek, that's the Sierra Perdida, you will no doubt come into contact, even if you're in Tayrona National Park just beaching it, but you'll come into contact with representatives, members of this Kogi culture. It's a very ancient, special, and spiritual culture that is highly respected in Colombia, in truth. And so we've been talking a little bit about this and Lorenzo's, let's say, way in to their culture to be able to work with them to export their coffee to Australia. So Lorenzo, I want to ask you about the Kogi coffee, Well, I mean, I have to ask, what is so special?
Well, we reckon Cookie Coffee is probably one of the most sustainable or purest in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So your listeners might know if they see a picture of a coffee plantation that there's just coffee. They basically clear the forest in order to plant coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Sierra Nevada, the coffee that the coffee produce grows wild in the middle of the forest.
Uh-huh.
So rather than clearing land, they just let it grow with whatever endogenous plants and species are there. So they basically let the birds do the pest control. They don't use any chemicals or any fertilizers other than what's naturally in the forest. And also, very importantly, there's a big spiritual aspect
mm-hmm.
to it. So every step of the production process is accompanied by spiritual ceremonies by the mammoths, who are the Kogi wise men. So, the Kogi have been growing coffee for a while,
mm-hmm.
but they used to get really bad deals on when they sold it to the market. So they organized, and now the whole thing from production until exporting is controlled by themselves. And yeah, they talk about the four principles of the coffee production.
Mm-hmm.
First is the spiritual aspect. Mm-hmm. Secondly is that they don't do anything that they don't like to intervene on Mother Nature. So there's no chemicals, mm-hmm. Like I mentioned, or anything else like that. They use just the coffee seeds that grow naturally in the Sierra. So in most of Colombia, they have introduced basically new varietals of coffee
mm-hmm.
that give a better yield or are more resistant to pests. But the Kogi are still growing the coffee that naturally grows there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they do everything themselves without any intervention.
I think it's amazing. I think you're doing a great thing by exporting this coffee, bringing this coffee to Australia. Tell me how the Australian market has taken to the Kogi coffee. I mean, is it a real specialty brand that people are looking for now?
Well, that's what we're aiming for. We've only started with the brand very recently, and about 3 weeks ago, we did a launch event.
Uh-huh.
But the thing about the Australian coffee market is I reckon it's probably one of the most advanced in the world. So coming from Colombia, where all you drink is tinto,
yeah.
which is filtered coffee. It's a big contrast on how much people know about coffee down here.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into a random coffee shop, you might find a coffee from Ethiopia and different ways of brewing it. And the random punter in the street will know a lot about coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of appetite for something that's different. And also the sustainability aspect as something that people have liked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we're trying to get into the market, but we've got a lot of buying so far.
Yeah, it's true. I just wanted to say you're the first Colombian I've ever heard say random punter. Yeah.
that's what happens when you live in Australia.
It's a true acceptance of the language, random punter. Yes. But no, fantastic news that you are making headway into the Australian coffee market. And I imagine it is a tough market to break, but if you've got a quality product and you do it right, there's no reason why it can't be a success. And particularly the sustainable nature. Australia is a country that's very forward thinking when it comes to the, you know, sustainability and issues of that nature. I know that for a fact. So it's got to be it's got to be quite exciting time. So you're dedicated full time to this. We'll remind the listeners that if you're out there in Australia, or if you're going to Australia, or if you're interested in Kogi Coffee, look up kogicoffee.com.au. So that's the website for that. But now, what I know, I've never been to Australia. I've known enough Australians. I'm from London. I mean, London feels like Australia whenever there's a sporting event on, but what can I say? Australian. I mean, what we know of Australians, they drink a coffee called the flat white. Is that something that's sort of Australian?
That's right. That's the original Aussie coffee drink. So a flat white is basically a latte,
okay,
but on a wider cup. Mm-hmm. So more like a cappuccino cup, and it's got a little bit less froth than the latte.
So is it almost like a café con leche in Colombia then?
Yeah, sure, but...
More milk than coffee?
Not really, because café con leche would be a filtered coffee with a dash of cold milk.
Uh-huh.
Cafe latte would be a shot of espresso, with heated up milk or frothed. Mm-hmm. So the frothy thing that you do for a cappuccino, but you give it less froth, and then you pour that over the espresso shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I know, because I know some people who swear by it. I mean, they won't drink anything else. I mean, it's their search for a flat white all the time. But, you know,
so. I did notice the last time I was in Colombia, they were offering it at the Juan Valdez shops.
Really? No,
yeah.
Because I only ever ask for an Americano or a Tinto, so I don't even know. I don't want milk in my coffee. I just want coffee. No sugar, no milk, just coffee.
Good on you.
Yeah, well, it's got to be black and strong. So, but let me...
Living here in Australia is where I learned to stop putting sugar in my coffee and appreciating... you know, all the flavors that and aromas that you can get just from different coffees from different origins. But I still do like a bit of milk in it.
Uh-huh.
So since I'm in the coffee industry, I'm drinking maybe 4 coffees a day. Mm. So I have a latte in the morning and I drink coffees, filters the rest of the day.
Okay, so you're watching your weight there.
No, I don't really mind that.
That's fantastic.
But a little bit sugar kind of ruins it.
I think so, because I think, you know, coffee is as complex, if not more so, than, let's say, wine. I mean, you really do get the different flavors and aromas, the bouquet, everything. It's really interesting how it's changed, you know, how the appreciation has changed. And as you, I mean, you're talking about coffee culture in Australia. The coffee culture, let's say, in, you know, a more... well-heeled section of Bogota now is very advanced. You know, Juan Valdez has opened up specialty stores. There are all sorts of independent coffee shops now, all doing their own thing. And it's really great to see this, to see, you know, new generations of Colombians appreciating the opportunity to try different coffees, not just, you know, the café con leche, or not just a tinto with panela in it, you know, the café campesino. It's actually good to see the variety coming out there. So it's very, but you had to go to Australia to learn about coffee.
Yeah, that's right. When I left Colombia, you couldn't find anything like a Juan Valdez or a special, what we call specialty coffee shop. Uh-huh. anywhere.
It's crazy.
But from what I hear, some places in Bogota and Medellin are starting to do it, and that makes me really happy.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing now. There's no excuse, in truth. There's no excuse to not try the good stuff. And most of them are sourcing their coffee from small, independent, sustainable producers. So it's very important to support these outlets.
But that's right.
So just like you went to Australia and you had to and you learned about coffee, tell us a little bit. You know, it's been pretty historic here in the last couple of days, and historic instances. You're so far away from Colombia, but how does it feel to be observing or talking to your family or reading the news? How does it feel once they announced this peace agreement, formalized with the FARC guerrillas? I know we're jumping from coffee to politics, but it's so important right now to discuss this. How does it feel being so far from home?
Richard, it feels pretty great. It feels like hope. Growing up in Colombia, there was never a time when there was an armed conflict. I'm 35 years old. And I'm just amazed that our children are going to learn what the FARC were and what the armed conflict was through history books.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And have you spoken to your family since the announcement?
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, it's funny because, I would say maybe 75% of my family are really happy and hopeful, and the other 25% are Uribistas.
so they're against the vote. Okay.
Yeah, but I am hopeful that the referendum is going to be unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are going to be tired of an armed conflict that's not going anywhere. Being an expat, I'm a little bit sad of not being there for it.
Mm-hmm.
I actually called the consulate yesterday.
Yeah.
To ask if we are going to be able to vote on the plebiscite.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to because I'm not signed up on the electoral census. I think
that's right.
Because we weren't here for the last presidential election, so we didn't vote. So I'm a little bit deflated that I'm not going to be able to be part of the process, but really hopeful. So Humberto de la Calle, is my hero right now.
yes.
What a guy! The way he negotiated the process, and listening to him speak yesterday about what it means for Colombia was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of as an expat.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people, we were speaking earlier about the Colombian diaspora, and I believe a lot of Colombians have left Colombia because of the armed conflict. Maybe it'll be an opportunity for a lot of us to come back and start, building nation, as they say.
I think so.
Construyendo nación,
yeah. I think, from my perspective, of course, I'm a foreigner here, and I've not been affected by the violence, the many, many years of the violence. But my wife's family, of course, has been. And, I have a Colombian son, and that's the truth. Yeah. And so this affects me directly. And what I think about is he's very, very small, 16 months. But I live in the hope that he won't have to do, the mandatory military service. If that's that sort of thing, I think about all these poor young boys who have to go out there into this conflict, this kind of mindless conflict that's going on. And you know, I watched the news and I watched these things, and I'm full of, like, the word you said is hope. I think that's hope. And I can understand, 75% of your family being approving of the agreements, and I can understand 25% of your family being Uribistas, backing the former President Uribe and the anti. I can understand it. This is a divisive subject in a country that goes through cyclical periods of severe violence. But like you said, I mean, everybody has to get out there and vote, whether they're voting C or whether they're voting no. They've just got to get out and have their voice heard. But what a pity that you can't vote. What a pity that, your vote will not be cast.
Yeah, I'm pretty deflated about that. And, I was a little bit ambivalent about the plebiscite itself after seeing what happened with Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, as an Englishman, you might know a little bit about that. But, it looks like a lot of people just didn't bother to vote at Brexit or voted for leaving the EU as a way to protest the government. And it's a little bit scary, but I do live in hope that the yes is going to win, and the fact that it was voted on by the people is gonna basically bulletproof the agreements.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, people who want to vote against it, and they're within all rights to do so. I mean, that's the truth. All rights to do so. But isn't it better that a kind of bad peace process is put into play than continual conflict? I mean, that's my thing. And then other people I've spoken to said, the FARC, they're going to get like 8 or 10 places in Congress and the Senate and so on, and they're not democratically elected. These criminals can't be in the Congress. Well, they're in good company, they're with the other criminals. So, I mean, that's the point. Yeah. I don't know. Isn't it just better that we're not shooting each other still?
Exactly. I mean, it's amazing looking at the... I saw a graph on Facebook today about the number of murders in Colombia, and since the ceasefire, how it's plummeted. So isn't that better?
Yeah, I think it's about the most peaceful period in Colombia's history, in truth. I really do.
Yes. We're a pretty tragic country, to tell you the truth. We've been in some kind of conflict or the other pretty much ever since independence.
Yeah.
And of course, there's still a few problems. The ELN, is still around.
Yeah.
The so-called BACRIM are still around. And there might be some FARC troops that are not going to, leave the arms, but it's hard to argue that it's not going to result in less conflict.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I feel. There will be, let's say, a vacuum of power in those areas where the state has had no sort of presence and the de facto rule of law was the FARC. I mean, we know that the ELN will move to some of these places. We know that the BACRIMs, the newly organized criminal gangs, will be there. But surely taking one big element out of the conflict has to be positive. But you've said very clearly that you feel deflated, that you can't vote, but you're hopeful. I mean, this is the thing. It's for a long time there has. I mean, if you think about 10 years ago, it was unthinkable that this could have, I mean, truly unthinkable. And this is what's so amazing about it for me. And I travel a lot in Colombia, a lot of rural areas and red zones and former red zones. And the campesinos, or the countryside class, are the ones who want peace more than most, because they're the ones who've been on the front line and been suffering. So I think, you know, they need to be listened to.
It's amazing, isn't it? And the people that seem to be against the agreement seem to be city people that have not been affected directly by the conflict. So it tells you a lot that it's the rural people that have lived it, the ones that want the whole thing to end.
Sure. And of course, this is going to affect your good friends and your work colleagues, the Kogi.
That's right.
I mean, they really are. I mean, they've been severely affected by not only the FARC, the ELN, and the paramilitaries in that area.
Yeah, I mean, that area, because of its geography and its isolation, has been a place where there have been a lot of both guerrillas and paramilitaries.
Mm-hmm.
During the years of conflict, there have been some Kogi victims,
mm-hmm.
and also they have had a lot of basically what they consider invasions to their territory to grow coca.
Yeah, yeah.
So from what I hear about the Kogi, they've had more trouble with the paramilitaries than the guerrillas themselves.
Yeah.
But they're all for it.
Yeah, of course.
They're all for it.
And of course, that, like you say, it's the geography, it's the strategic area.
Exactly.
For transshipment of drugs, arms, everything.
Exactly. That's right. And yeah, especially drugs. And if you see the history of the Sierra Nevada, that's where what they call the marimberos.
Yeah, the marijuana growers.
The marijuana growers before the, let's say, boom of cocaine happened.
Yeah.
That's where they used to grow all the marijuana. And just an aside, that the Kogi are a culture that consume a lot of coca leaf.
But it's the chewing of it, though.
That's right. So Kogi men, after they reach a certain age,
mm-hmm.
they get something called a poporo.
That's it. That's the word.
Which is a little tool that they fill with a powder that's mm-hmm. Basically calcium.
Yeah.
And they combine that with the coca leaf, and they are constantly chewing it. So, you know, it's not about eradicating coca.
No.
But it's about, you know, just getting rid of the actors that are clearing land in order to grow it,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera.
But it's about respecting a sacred crop for its original uses, not for what we've done to it in these years. But it's been, I mean, you know, it's fascinating. The Kogi, the peace, the coffee, it really is. And what, I'll come back to this point again. What a disappointment that you can't vote. And I've actually heard of other friends overseas who aren't registered too and are you know, upset because this is a landmark historic moment.
Out of all the elections that have happened since I've been away, this is the one that I really wish I could participate in.
Yeah, this is true, and I understand that. I understand that fully, and this is the one I want to vote in, but of course I can't because I'm not a Colombian citizen. But
it's really hard to become a Colombian citizen, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a resident, and even then, when I went to vote in the mayoral elections here in Bogota, I had been declared dead. So that didn't work. I said, well, I don't know how this works because I've been able to register for university, get a loan and get my cédula, but I'm dead. So therefore, well, that goes to show you how difficult sometimes these elections can be. But let's not drag on. Listen, I'm just going to say again, I'm going to say to the listeners out there, we've been talking to Lorenzo Perafan in Sydney. I apologize for a couple of the hiccups we've had, but Sydney is a long way from Bogota. Bogota's a long way from Sydney. That's what happens. But we've been talking about Kogi, the Kogi culture, we've been talking about coffee, how Lorenzo has been exporting Kogi coffee to Australia, and we've been talking about how Lorenzo feels as a Colombian so far from home right now at this historic moment, and it's been really, really interesting. So please sign up and see, put in the website kogicoffee.com.au and check out what Lorenzo's doing. And of course, on our Facebook page and on Twitter, when it's out, we will publicize the documentary, the short film that Lorenzo has made about the Kogi coffee and so on. So Lorenzo, let me take this moment to say thank you very much for your time, because it's not easy to organize a time between Australia and Bogota.
Yeah, the 16-hour difference makes it a little bit hard, but I'm really happy we managed to find a day. It was a really lovely conversation, Richard.
You're most welcome. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Episode 153 has come to an end. We've been talking to Lorenzo Perafan in Sydney, Australia. We've been talking coffee, Kogi, and peace with the FARC. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation, because this is the idea, is that we keep communicating about Colombia and getting it out there into the airwaves. If you want to get in touch, that's ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. We've got the websites, ColombiaCallingRadio.com. Of course, we're on Twitter and Facebook as Colombia Calling. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to tune in next week.